Hello and welcome to Pardes from Jerusalem, the podcast series from the Pardes Institute of Jewish Studies in Jerusalem. I'm Larry Kluger, a Pardes alum. This week, counting the Omer. I also want to say this week that I regret the delays in getting out this podcast. We had a number of delays throughout the podcast production process, and I do regret that the podcast was delayed. Thank you for your understanding. This week, Rabbi James Jacobson Mizels discusses counting the Omer, a drash that was first presented during World War II. Rabbi James Jacobson Mizels is a faculty member at Pardes. His focus is Jewish mysticism. And now, Rabbi James Jacobson Mizels.
Thank you, Larry. Today we'll be looking at a text from Rabbi Kolonimus Kalman Shapira from his book, The Eish Kodesh, which is a series of drashot written during the war in the Warsaw Ghetto. And this particular drash was given on May 11th, 1940. And he starts, Usfartem lechem imacharat ha-Shabbat, right? Telling us that you shall count from the day after the Shabbat, whatever that means, we'll get into that discussion, in order to count the Omer, which is the period we're in now, count to the Omer until we arrive at Shavuot. V'chayadu mi-gmara, she'na tzaduki modim she'akavanahu mi-marcharat yom tov. And he says, as we know from the Gemara, that the tzaduki and the Sadducees didn't agree that the meaning of the verse there, its intention, was for the day after Yom Tov, right? That is the day after Pesach. We have the first day of Pesach. The second day, we start counting the Omer. They wanted to understand Shabbat literally as Shabbat and start counting after Shabbat. And he says, we're going to try to understand what this verse means. What's the meaning of the verse that it calls Yom Tov by the term Shabbat? How come it says Shabbat if what it really means is the first day of Yom Tov, the first day of the Chag of Pesach? V'efshar ki'ita b'gemara avodah zara, shal Rabbi Yishmael d'Rabbi Yoshua, amar le mipnei ma esru gvinot nochrim. So Rabbi Yishmael asked Rabbi Yoshua a question about non-Jewish cheese. Okay, non-Jewish cheese, is it kosher? Why is it not kosher? Why did they forbid it? And the response is that at a certain point in the Gemara, he distracts him and starts talking about some other issue. Amar lo Yishmael, achia eich ata koreh ki dovin dodecha miyayin. And what he asks is, how do you read this verse, that is the second verse of Shir HaShirim, ki dovin dodecha miyayin, for your love is better than wine. Right, the verse begins, yishakenim nishikot pihu, let him kiss me with the kisses of mouth, ki tovim dodecha miyayin, for your love is better than wine. So he says, how do you read it? Do you read it ki tovim dodecha miyayin, or ki tovim dodaich? That is, who's speaking here? Is your masculine love better than wine, or is your feminine love better than wine, is the question. In that sense, is it Knesset Yisrael, Israel addressing God, or is it God addressing Israel? Amarle ki tovim dodaich. He says, I read it as ki tovim dodaich, right, as the feminine, you as the feminine. Amarle ina devarken, shere chavero melamed ala v'chulei, v'amru b'gamra shegazra, and then he goes on, they have a further discussion, he says he doesn't agree with his interpretation. Okay, then it says in the Gemara, shegzera zo she'asru gvinot akum betocha yud bet chodesh hayta. And what was the reason? How come this whole event happened? Because this takana they made of forbidding non-Jewish cheese was within 12 months after the takana, the rabbinic establishment, the rabbinic decree had been made. V'gzeira, terem sheni malela yud bet chodesh, ein megalin tama, minev shafshar yakil miba, kshelo yaskin latama. And there's a general principle we have, which is that within the first 12 months of some decree, you don't reveal the reasons for the decree. Why? It may be that somebody won't agree with the reason, and therefore they won't take the gzera, they won't take the rabbinic decree seriously. But after 12 months, after a year, when already this gzera, this decree has spread forth in Israel and been accepted, it's already established practice, then you can reveal the reason that people will keep doing it just because it's established practice. But he distracted him to something else. That Rabbi Yishmael said that it's God saying to Israel, right, that your love is sweeter than wine. V'marlo Rabbi Yoshua, Sheknes Yisrael Amer LeKodesh Baruch Hu, right? But the Rabbi Yoshua says, no, it's actually Knesset Yisrael. It's Israel saying to God this phrase of your love is sweeter than mine. Aravim alai devarai dodecha hainu divrei sofrim, yoter meyena shel Torah. That is that they are pleasant to me, the words of your beloved, that is the words of the sofrim, the chachamim, the scribes, the wise, greater than the wine of Torah. That is what he's saying, is that the enactments of the chachamim, of the rabbis, are actually more dear to God than the very words of Torah itself. Right? So this is the setup for the beginning of the Pizetzner's discussion here, which is going to center on this question of the relationship between these different elements of Torah. Torah Shebichtav, right, the written Torah, and Torah Shebaal Peh, Torah Shebaal Peh, which is developed in some ways by the rabbi and given and spoken and discovered by the rabbis. And so, a little farther down, the Pizetzner continues. Aval ad mitzvat Hashem min haTorah ananu osim b'chuka. Af et ha-mishpatim lo mishum ha-sechel, she'anu mevinim behen, osim, rak kedei lekayem et gzeirat ha-melech. The mitzvot, the commandments of God from the Torah, we do it like a chok, right? We do it just because it's established, right? A chok versus a mishpat. But even the mishpatim, even those laws which we do understand, we don't do them because of our intellect, because we understand them. Rather, we simply do them in order to fulfill the decree of the king, the decree of God. But this is not the case with the enactments of the rabbis, which are a fence for a fence, a guarding for a guarding, right? They protect the more essential core laws of the Torah itself. And it seems that only when a person actually knows the reason to do the thing, is his doing it a mitzvah. And not when he doesn't know. Kivan shal pi pashut hibatzma ena mitzvah. Because, in the simplest understanding, this thing itself, the enactment of the rabbis, is not itself a mitzvah. It's not itself a commandment of God. V'rakadeh lishmor et ha-mitzvah d'oraita. And it only exists in order to protect, really to make us to keep the d'oraita, the Torah commandment, the Torah shebichtav, right, the written law. V'kivan she'inu yodea tama, shu kadeh lishamer midvar shal d'oraita, eichnu mar shekayem. But if he doesn't know the reason for the k'zera, which is in order to do something which is d'oraita, in order to do some kind of commandment of the written law, how can we say that he's even keeping a mitzvah? Because really what this mitzvah is really in a sense just a secondary extension of some core mitzvah that is being protected, that is being preserved. And so if he doesn't understand to which core mitzvah this is directed, he's not actually doing a mitzvah at all. He's just doing something. So he said, we might have thought this. Aval ze'eno. But it's not the case. Ki Hashem melamed Torah le'mo Yisrael, v'lo melamed levad rak gam noten lehem haTorah. Because God teaches Torah to Israel. And not only does God teach the Torah, it's not only that God teaches the Torah, God also gave them the Torah. Right? Literally gave the Torah into their hand. Shenatana Torah le'Yisrael, ad sheme'ata gam Yisrael yechuyim la'asot mitzvot. God gave the Torah to Israel to such an extent that from this point onward, Israel could also make mitzvot. Right? That is, Israel is really part of being in the image of God, has this divine power of making mitzvot, of creating mitzvot anew. Israel here is a full partner in the Torah. They have truly received the Torah in the sense that they can make a new Torah. Ki mitzvot d'oraita hen evarin d'malka, because the mitzvot d'oraita, the written, the commandments of the written law, of the written Torah, are the limbs of the king. V'kivan sh'Yisrael nechazim b'gufa d'malka, v'kodesh baruch hu v'oraita v'Yisrael chad, l'chen ritzonam da'atam v'nishmatam, shekshurim b'kodesh baruch hu yochlim gam hem la'asot mitzvot. So he says here that mitzvot, right, are the limbs of God. Right? So this is quite an interesting claim. The mitzvot are not simply the commandments of God. They're not separate from God. They're not something God said and then is separated from God, or something he gives as a present and we take away from the divine. But the mitzvot are the actual substance and essence of God's very self. They are God's body. And because Israel grasps the body of the king, because we are deeply connected, because we are hopefully davuk, we are literally cleaving to the body of the king. And God and the Torah and Israel are one. right? There are all these different ways of saying that we might say God as separate from ourselves in some way, but actually on this deeper level, first he points out that the Torah actually is God. The mitzvot are God. It's not simply a commandment of God. It's not a communication of God. It's God's very being. And when we do mitzvot, we actually participate in the very being of God. And then he says, quoting the famous line, not just God and Oraita are one, but also Israel is one. Israel, the Torah, and God are all actually essentially one. And so when we act, let's say, in the best way, or in the way which is fully conscious of ourself, of our being as Israel, then we too are genuinely part of God. And so as an aspect of God, simply, of course, we too can create mitzvot. We can create Torah because, in another sense, we are Torah. We ourselves are Torah. And so he says, when that's true, because of that case, their will and their mind, their consciousness, and their souls, when they are connected, when they're connected to God, they're able to make mitzvot. Right? Because when we're connected to God, we're actually, in a deeper sense, are God. We are an aspect of God's very being. And so, just as God produces mitzvot as part of God's being, that is, God helps produce and renew God's body, so we too help produce and create mitzvot as part of our very being, in that sense, as part of our body. V'chamosh amra gemara, atem, afilu shogagim, atem, afilu mezidim. In Masechet Rosh Hashanah in the Gemara, there's a discussion about the proper dates of holidays, how we set the calendar. And there's a famous disagreement which happens between Rabbi Gamliel and Rabbi Yeshua about the day of Yom Kippur, a very interesting story. And eventually, Rabbi Yeshua gives in and comes to him, in a sense, violating Yom Kippur on the day that he thinks is Yom Kippur, accepting Rabbi Gamliel's and the rabbi's judgment. And a question, of course, is raised concerning this, that Rabbi Yeshua, of course, is extremely distressed because of this, because he doesn't want to violate what he thinks are the prohibitions of Yom Kippur. He doesn't want to do things on Yom Kippur, here bringing money and a staff in his hand, right, carrying and dealing with money in Yom Kippur, when he thinks it's genuinely Yom Kippur. How can he do this? How can he give in to the decree of the rabbis, the decree of Rabbi Gamliel, when he thinks they've made a mistake? And it says in the Gemara, rereading Otam, them, from various verses in Vayikra, that why is this word repeated multiple times? Because it means that you set the date, you make the calendar the way it is, whatever you decree is the actual genuine nature of the calendar, even if you make a mistake, even if you make a mistake on purpose, even if you just mess up, the Gemara says, right? Despite, in all those ways, if you do it, that is the case. That is, these rabbinic decrees are not simply happenstance. They're not simply attempts to divine and figure out when the holidays are supposed to be. The decree itself, the decision of the rabbis, makes the holidays actually that very date. It has this profound, almost ontological effect. V'gam ha-mitzvot de-rabbanan mivarchin asher kiddushan ha-mitzvotav. And he adds, also on the mitzvot de-rabbanan we say, who has sanctified us in his commandments, right? That this commandment, even the mitzvah de-rabbanan, a commandment which was created by the rabbis and isn't written in the Torah, doesn't seem to be directly from God, we still make a blessing on it saying that God sanctified us through this commandment. This is a commandment from God. V'gam ha-marnu kfar shemizeh ro'im shagam shemitchila shosin ha-chachamim ekzerot. And this is as he just said before, that we see that though at the beginning we might say that the chachamim, the rabbis, make some kind of decree in order to protect, to develop, to defend a mitzvah which is d'oraita, a mitzvah from the Torah. In any case, after they've made this commandment, after they've commanded it, it itself becomes a mitzvah, right? There's this moment, the act of the command, the act of the gzera, the act of the decree itself, transforms it into a mitzvah itself. As he says, it's a great point. For instance, the second day of Yontif in the diaspora, right? In the diaspora, there are 2 days of Yontif, while in Israel there's only one. And originally the reason was that we were unsure exactly maybe when the month started, the moon was seen in Israel, because we're so far away, so we did 2 days just in case. But he says now, we're experts in fixing the times of the months, the times of the moon, right? We know exactly. The calendar is totally fixed. There's no question about when Pesach starts, when Shavuot starts. But in any case, we still keep that as a second day of Yontif. And not only do we keep the prohibitions, which you might say, okay, it's fake, maybe we're not sure we keep prohibitions, but we don't do certain positive commandments we would do on a weekday, such as putting on tefillin. We don't do that on the second day of Yontif when we're in the diaspora. And so here we see that the mitzvah itself, the Rabbanan mitzvah, becomes itself essentially a mitzvah. And as he says, Shehu mitzvah doraita, putting on tefillin is a mitzvah doraita, but in any case we don't do it. Because once the sages, once the rabbis established that we'd have the second day of Yontif, the second day of Chag, then it itself became essentially a mitzvah. Even though at first it was just because of doubt. Right? So he's discussing this classic theme of this tremendous power of the rabbis, of the rabbinic decree, to make something a mitzvah. And yet here, it's spoken of not really in the mode of human independence from the divine, which is sometimes the way we might describe these kinds of stories, as a demonstrating a kind of independence and otherness of the rabbis from the divine, and the control of rabbis over the Torah. Rather's argument here is the opposite. That what it demonstrates is that ultimately the rabbis are themselves an expression of the divine. And so when they make a decree, it is not simply as if, but it is God, God's self, who exactly is making that mitzvah. It is essentially part of the Torah, part of the very being of God. And so we'll skip down now another paragraph, because now it continues to something perhaps even more radical than this statement. V'chein hu b'chol ish Yisrael, l'fir echo u'matzavo b'avodah. Me'da'ato ritzono v'nafsho naseh mitzvot. And now he makes an extra claim, a more unusual claim, that this is true also with every Jew, according to his level and his worth and his situation in his avodah, in his divine service, from his own conscience, his own mind, and from his will and from his soul, he makes mitzvot. This, of course, is a very powerful claim. It's not only that the rabbis make gzeirot, and in their takanot, in their decisions, mitzvot are created, but in fact, every single one of us, in our own individual work, can create mitzvot. Every single one of us is a partner or an extension of God. U'b'shem harav hakadosh, zecher tzadik livracha, mimoglitzina, right? The Rebbe Moglitzina, ita shegam hakavanot she'asolo ish Yisrael atzmo lechaven, kavanot tavod hen, ad kan l'shono kortz. He says, even the kavanot, which a person just makes up himself to say, right? He's doing some mitzvah and he thinks, I want to do it with this particular intention, or I want to have this particular idea in mind. They are great kavanot. They're good kavanot. Hainu, that is, shemisha eni yodea lechaven kavanat ari, shemichaven melivo v'nafsho la'ashem kafi da'ato v'ritzano kavanot tavot hen. The one who doesn't know the kavanot of the Ri, right, some special kabbalistic kavanot of Rabbi Yitzhak Luria, that it's okay when he intends things just from his heart and his soul to God, according to his own understanding, his own mind, and his own will, they are good. They are efficacious covenants. But it all depends on his annihilation in God. The more he nullifies, he annihilates himself into God, then his very being, his essence, becomes more divine. And from this, he creates mitzvot. And here again, we see this movement in the Pizetzner. While classically this ability of the rabbis to create mitzvot might be seen as radical independence, the notion of radical free will in humanity, the notion of human power and efficacy, here in fact this entire notion is turned on its head. We create mitzvot precisely by surrendering completely and annihilating ourselves into the divine, by letting go of our sense of self, by becoming more divine ourselves, then our actions naturally result in the result of divine action, which is mitzvot. And this is true not just of rabbis and great scholars, but of every single one of us at every level we are. Whatever we're doing at any state, when we are doing the mitzvot, when we create our own intentions, our own way of doing the mitzvot, our own meaning in the mitzvot, that in fact becomes, when we annihilate ourselves and let go, when we surrender into the divine, that itself becomes a mitzvah. We partner with God here in the creation, really, of sanctity, and really in the creation of the sacred order of our lives, the sacred structure of both time and space and body. This sacred structure, which is the mitzvot, which we now co-participate in creating. And yet we do so only to the extent that, in fact, we let go of our sense of self, that we're able to let go of that ego and surrender into this broader perspective, this more open perspective, this more loving perspective, which is divinity. Lechen, kshechas v'shal naset atzara liyakov, umitpalim anu eze tova yotze mize. Halo adaraba eno skim b'torah kefish asku, v'od shemitfot ein mechuvan lasot kefish asu. And so when, God forbid, there is suffering for Yaakov, which of course he is experiencing very deeply at that moment, and we are shocked because then we ask ourselves, what kind of good is going to come from this? And in fact, it's the opposite. Right now, we're not studying Torah the way we used to, the way we once could. And moreover, the mitzvot that we're doing, we don't intend them in the same way anymore, the way we once went to, because it's so difficult, we're suffering so much, we just can't do it. But he says, actually at this point, through this very suffering and difficulty that we're going through, we may experience this in our own life, some suffering and difficulty, and it's actually disturbing our avodah. We actually feel like we're not doing as great a job, right? There's some crisis in our life, there's some difficulty, and it makes us less effective. We think, how can we see any good in this crisis? How can we see any good in this difficulty? And he says, no, there is still some good in there. What's the good in there? Because through that suffering sometimes, we actually annihilate ourselves more into God. We surrender more into the divine. In that crisis, in that challenge, sometimes there's a possibility of letting go a little more of that sense of holding on, that sense of ego, that sense of control, and surrendering more into that openness which is in divinity. For we see, says, that there's nobody's going to save us except for God, but that ultimately we're not in control. And therefore this self-annihilation is a coming closer to God, to such an extent that in all our actions, our words, and our thoughts, to God, they become mitzvot, right? That we annihilate ourselves in such a way that, in a certain sense, it isn't even about as much the technicality of mitzvot or Talmud Torah in the normal sense, but every aspect of our life, when we let go into God, is itself a mitzvah. And of course, this is a classic, one of the classic Hasidic explanations of how we understand the avodah, the worship, the practice of the avot, of the patriarchs. They, of course, didn't have the mitzvot yet. So what is it exactly that they were doing? Especially given some of the claims of the Gemara that the patriarchs indeed did keep the mitzvot. And the understanding is that they were so in tune with God, there was simply a natural response to each moment. A natural response was the very keeping of the Torah. Because that's what's naturally called for when we are fully aware and present in every situation. Hainu, he says, that is when they do everything it's possible for them to do. Everything it's possible for them to do, right? Because in that state of self-annihilation, sometimes we make a mistake in thinking this self-surrender, this annihilation, is a kind of passivity, is a kind of quietism. But in fact, it's exactly the opposite. That our surrender, our letting go of our sense of self, which is the sense of ego, which is connected with our sense of fear and anger and desires of certain sorts. When we let go of that holding on, when we let go of just much more simply, when we simply let go of that tension of needing things to be a certain way, when we let go of that illusion of control, which is the sense of self, the illusion that we can actually control ourselves and our environment completely, which we never can, and which instead we surrender into the hand of God, then in fact, in a much easier and open way, we do everything that we can do, and we act as wisely as possible. And lo, as he said before, as we mentioned, right, in all the mitzvot, we say who sanctified us in his commandments, right? Even the mitzvot that we created ourselves, that humans created, we say you sanctified us in his commands, because they too are the commands of God. Aval b'sfirat ha'omer, mekadashin et atzmo b'prat yut, b'zayin midot. But in sfirat ha'omer, the person sanctifies himself in particular, in particularity, in the seven divine qualities, that is, in the seven lower sfirot. And you may have noticed this, right? Each week of the Omer, each week of the sphera is dedicated to a different sphera. And each day is dedicated to a different aspect of the sphera, which is the combination of that sphera with one of the other spherot. So he says, not only is there this general quality of sanctifying ourselves, and in a sense becoming divinity and creating mitzvot through that aspect of sanctification and self-annihilation, but the Omer, the period of the Omer of the sphera is actually an opportunity to do it with great specificity, to work very specifically on particular qualities. Right? And it says, in the particularity of each one of the seven sphirot, because we do each particular seven quality of each seven sphirot, in every particular sphira, it's a mitzvah to count the weeks, right? To be aware of the general quality of the week and the more general quality you're working on. And it's a mitzvah to count the day. That is to be aware of the particular quality of that quality that you're working on that day. Sheva yehayamim shebechal shavua. 7 days of each week. V'hakol v'kidashanu. All of it is ordered to sanctify us. L'chein mizeh kol etzem Yisraeli naseh mitzvah. And from this, the very self of the Jew becomes a mitzvah. Right? The very self of the Jew becomes a mitzvah. And so here again we see that transition of mitzvah. First that claim was made about God, that the mitzvot are not simply commands, not an extension of God, not the communication of God, but are God's very body, God's very self. And so too the Bezetzner says here, our actual role and goal is not to do simply the mitzvot as external actions, and indeed not to do anything in the world as external actions, but to make both our practice of mitzvot and our practice of every moment in life mitzvot in a much deeper sense. That is, that our very essence in our letting go, in our openness, becomes divine. And so our very body, every act, becomes a mitzvah, that it becomes, in its essential sense, a divine commandment. Because in the most essential sense, we are no longer acting. There's no self anymore that's acting. The divine is simply acting through us. And so every action, every movement, every gesture is in that sense a divine command. And so now we return, right, in classic Hasidic style, to the question at the very beginning of the drasha, which is, why do they call Yom Tov Shabbat? Right, when they say we should start counting Mimacharat Shabbat, after Shabbat, which we understand is the first day of Pesach. Why is Yom Tov here called Shabbat? Yom Tov Yisrael Mekadashim. V'Shabbat Kfiya V'Kaima Sheshem Mekadasho. Yom Tov, as we discussed above, the essential aspects of Yom Tov, of the calendar, of the monthly calendar, the lunar calendar, is that we sanctify it, right? And whatever the rabbis decide, that actually becomes when Yontif is. That's when Chag is. That is the actual ontological fact of the matter. With Shabbat, on the other hand, it's not the case. Shabbat, God fixes and establishes and sanctifies. As we know, God rested on the seventh day. So Shabbat, we can't just pick, and we can't pick, oh, we want to do Shabbat on a different day. No. God has established Shabbat. The divine has established Shabbat. And we simply have to tap into there the divine establishment of Shabbat. Right? As he says, Mikadesh Shabbat. God is Mikadesh Shabbat, the one who sanctifies Shabbat. V'ayadehit katshanu b'sfira, nikra gam yontov, she'anu mikadashim b'shem Shabbat. But through our sanctifying ourselves, through the counting of the Omer, through the Sfirat Omer, which means this sanctification is through becoming divine, through, in a certain sense, not even becoming divine, but simply coming to the awareness of our always already present divine nature, of recognizing the divinity within us, then Yontif, which we sanctify, is called Shabbat, right? Because Yontif, which we think we're sanctifying as some external element of Shabbat, as Yisrael, as Jews, as human beings, separate from Shabbat, we are actually sanctifying as God's very self and God's very presence. And so in that act of sanctification, Yom Tov there becomes, the first day of Pesach becomes Shabbat. And so the challenge really the Pesetzner presents to us here is how do we act in a way that every actions of ours, every action, could be a mitzvah? What kind of consciousness and presence, what kind of letting go of our smaller self, of our petty self, do we want to do that we could act in the sense of freedom and openness and love and compassion so that every action, every word, every movement is itself a divine gift, a moment of grace, a moment of chesed, and therefore a divine mitzvah.
Thank you, Rabbi Jacobson Meisels. Your comments on podcasts are always appreciated, so please send an email to podcasts@pardesusa.org. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll see you on the next episode of Pardes from Jerusalem.